Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw. It all starts now on Sports Radio 670 The Score and always live on the free Odyssey app.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. Welcome back inside the clubhouse right here on 670 The Score and your free Odyssey app, broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios. I'm David Haw, along with Bruce Levine, talking baseball from 9 to 11 like we do every Saturday morning. Today, wondering if we have a problem in Houston, revisiting the Kyle Tucker trade, and how the White Sox will handle their giant problems on the south side today. Bruce, good morning. How are you?
Look at you. Look at those. What an open.
Just trying to tie things together, Bruce.
I mean, the writer never goes away inside of you, does it?
No. I'm just a writer in front of a microphone. What day is it?
Today is Saturday.
Saturday morning.
Welcome to Inside the Clubhouse.
Yes, we are here. We are talking Cubs. We are talking White Sox. Boy, last night in Houston, though, there was a problem, Bruce, because the Cubs lose 7-4. And I think that after shutting out the Cardinals on successive days, that you will accept a loss to the Astros on the road in against a division leader.
No.
But, I don't think that you are going to be as easily, it's not as easy to get past how they lost and who did the damage.
The answer to all to those questions and that that look at it is a big no. There's no way you accept that. It's one game. You accept a loss. I'm with you on that. It's just one game.
Yeah.
But the brand of baseball that they've been playing, particularly the starting pitching over the last 10 days, that's sample size enough for me to say they're in need of help. And that's with Imanaga coming back and showing that he's still Imanaga. That was the greatest part of what has happened over the last week and 10-day period is Imanaga's back. And, you know, the miracle of Imanaga is he can be out for 7 weeks, go out on the mound and look like he hadn't missed one day.
No doubt about it. And that was the highlight of the week before Friday happened. And then we'll get to that. But what's happening in this show, well, here's what we're going to do. 9:30, the Cubs hitting coach Dustin Kelly will join us. At 10:30, the White Sox director of hitting, Ryan Fuller, will join us. Today is a hitting day on Inside the Clubhouse. In between, we'll get your reaction to what happened this week with the Cubs and the White Sox, 312-644-6767. But, Bruce, with you establishing that as the most, I think, interesting, significant thing since the last time we were here a week ago, Shota Imanaga's return was significant, was welcome, and it was impressive. But boy, with one swing of the bat, Cam Smith sure changed the subject Friday night in Houston.
Okay, there's no reason to bury the lead. The last 10 games, the Cubs are 4-6.
Okay.
Here are the innings pitched by the starting pitchers since the beginning of that time. Okay. Horton last night, 4. Imanaga, 5 the previous game. Boyd, 6. That's like 10 innings of baseball. Boyd pitched 6. So 4, 5, 6. Tyone, 4. Brown, 5. Ray, 5 1/3. Horton, 4 2/3. Boyd, 5. Tyone, 4. Brown, 5. Okay. They've won 4 of those games. They gave up 16 homers over those 10 games, 4-6 during that period. The more telling thing for this team, and again, it's a team with a lead. They have a 2-game lead on the Brewers, 3.5 on the Cardinals, only 5 on the Reds.
The division's bunching up.
So it's a division that 10 days ago, they were 7.5 games.
10 days ago feels like it was April.
Yeah. Now, analyzing what the Cubs have done against teams that are better than 500, this is their record in series since they've won their last series against a team that was over 500.
Okay, I need for you to tell me when that was. When was the last
April time? April 22nd.
That alone is alarming. The Cubs, you're telling me, have not won a series over a team with a winning record since the last week in April?
That's correct. They beat the Dodgers in that series at home.
Okay.
Since then, they're 0-6-1.
Ouch.
Okay.
Ouch.
So, again.
Are you doubting now, and the numbers support it, that the Cubs can beat good teams?
That's for them to prove. They have 80 games to do that, David. Okay.
We're halfway through the season. The halfway point reached us on Thursday, and that's a good spot to look ahead. And you're right. They have struggled against good teams in series, which makes you think that the playoffs are a series. And right. If they were in a playoff series right now, it wouldn't fare well based on the numbers.
So, and that's it. So, again, the Cubs are a very good team, okay? They have, I think they're tied for the second best record in the National League. That's good. I mean, there's no denying that. Their defense is outstanding. Their base running is outstanding. Their offense can be powerful and can be outstanding. However, the starting pitching is limping toward the All-Star game.
And since we last spoke last week, we talked to you during the week, and we appreciate that, but since the last Inside the Clubhouse, the Cubs have sent down Ben Brown to AAA Iowa. He has gotten demoted because Shota came back and did what he did. But now the Cubs, as you point out, have a starting pitching problem. And you could say it's going to lead to a Cubby crisis if they don't do something about it. How soon can they realistically get somebody here? Can they make a trade? I think that depends on who you talk to. And I know you've been talking to a lot of people, but it's June 28th. And I don't know, Bruce, if it's realistic to expect anybody here before the MLB draft.
Yeah, I reported that they were hoping to get something done within a week or 10 days. Mm-hmm. I don't think that deal that they were working on, and it seemed, you know, it's pretty clear now after Bob Nightingale's report that it was with Pittsburgh, that deal is not getting done that quickly, okay? So that was for Mitch Keller.
Mitch Keller, 1-10 Mitch Keller.
Right. 1-10 Mitch Keller.
I know we play for the Pirates. Right. I know.
So again, we've talked on Mullion Haw, you know, ad nauseum about the fact that a real difference maker starting pitcher is really what they need. Now, Hoyer and company might say to you, yeah, but that's not realistic. Alcantara is not going to get traded until July 31st. Mm-hmm. We need something before that, okay? How would David Haw, the general manager of the Cubs, answer that question?
I would try to be as aggressive as possible, and I would still try to talk the Marlins, if that's the object of your desire, the main guy you want, I would try to make it as enticing as possible, and understand you might have to overpay a little bit, but I think that when you're talking about a prospect capital, you're not talking about money, that it would be a risk worth taking, because it's all tied into Friday night in Houston. This is all tied together. You are aggressive in every conversation you have about getting an ace here to help your pitching rotation, because you have one season with Kyle Tucker, with the same Kyle Tucker who was given, along with Ryan Pressly, a four-minute video tribute in Houston last night because he helped them win a World Series a few years ago. Still has the ball to prove it. Isn't that cool? He still has the fault, but the final out, that Ryan Pressly was on the mound, Kyle Tucker was in the field. Nonetheless, you have one season of King Tuck, and you cannot waste it. And you cannot squander that opportunity.
All right. But every time I bring up a player like a Horton in a trade, right, everybody goes, oh, no, Levine, what are you talking about? You can't trade this. Well, I happen to like Horton probably as much.
Bruce, there's no need to be passive aggressive here. I know you're talking about me.
I like Horton.
I know you're talking about me.
Well, let's stick to the subject.
Okay, I like Horton too.
Let's stick to the subject. I like Horton, his future, as much as anybody. If the goal is to win a World Series this year and next, you have to put him in a trade for Alcantara.
Do you think that's what the Marlins want?
What would you want? It's we're sitting here on June, what, 28th, 29th? Yes. So what would you want now compared to July 31st, right? Okay. Will you get – I counted 16 teams that are in the race, 6 teams in an American League, 10 teams in National League that are 500 or better that are in the race right now, okay? It's going to be, as they say, a seller's market because, first of all, nobody trades good young pitching ever, right? And Alcantara is still under contract for a few more years.
He's got 2 more years of contract control, team control after this one, which makes that price even steeper.
Relatively cheap for starting pitching right now, right? It's not $20 million a year, right? So you have him for 2 more years, albeit he was injured. He's working his way back to being the dominant pitcher that he was. And by all the games that he's pitching now, it looks like he's on his way. Is that gamble worth one of the best young pitchers in baseball in Horton?
I wonder about that, and I go back and forth, and it's a very good point, and it's not something that you can just unequivocally slam the door and say, no, 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 and I have to come around on that. And I think people who have this attachment to prospects and saying, no, you would never trade somebody like Cade Horton have to understand that maybe that is what it will take. And I think the context of the conversation, it always bears remembering how urgent the amount of urgency that this season carries.
Because, you mean like trading for Tucker?
Yes, because the Tucker trade is what created this the context for this entire year, which brings us to Friday night in Houston. Back to the fourth inning when the 2022 first-round draft pick for the Cubs is getting ready to face
2024.
I'm sorry.
22.
Stay with me here, Bruce.
Sorry.
This is a whole setup.
Okay.
This is the way a writer would set it up, Bruce.
Okay.
The 2022 first-round draft pick for the Cubs is on the mound. He's facing the 2024 first-round draft pick for the Cubs at the plate. Meanwhile, the 2023 first-round draft pick for the Cubs is standing at third base, wondering why they didn't want him and they wanted the guy at the plate when they were talking about a trade. And here comes the fastball from 2022 first-rounder to 2024 first-rounder. You know what Cam Smith did?
Cam Smith hit high in the air, deep left field. This ball is going to leave the yard.
Thank you, Sean Sears. The ball left the yard. Cam Smith homered off Cade Horton, and Matt Shaw's at third base. And you're wondering, did they trade the wrong guy? No, okay. I love Matt Shaw. But at first hot second, Bruce.
Don't forget Paredes hit a home run yesterday.
Thank you. So Kyle Tucker is in Chicago after all that setup, and you wonder, how long will he be here? And was it worth it? Will it be worth it trading for Kyle Tucker in Chicago for one season? I know that's a gross overreaction to what we saw last night in a 7-4 loss by the Cubs.
Here's the question I have to your well-set-up premise. Would the Cubs be in the position they are right now with Cam Smith in right field and Paredes at third base?
I'm going to say no, but I don't really know that. But that's a great question.
17
Bruce.
Home runs at third base.
I know.
Now.
He's got one more than Tucker. Based on those numbers, I think you can say yes, they would be. But I understood the spirit of the trade.
I don't think so, but
you don't think they would?
No. Tucker changed the whole mentality of the team, the construction of the lineup, the way that other teams look at the lineup with him coming up second to start the game. And facing him 4 or 5 times.
How much credit do you give Tucker for, like, say, Suzuki's success?
I think the whole lineup has benefited hugely from one of the best hitters in the game, not to mention best all-around
players. He's a top-10 player.
Oh, he's higher than that.
Okay.
Name 5 guys you'd rather have than Tucker.
It's hard to do that.
Right.
It's hard to do that. And I think we become prisoners of the moment. And Isak Paredes, 17 home runs on June 28th. Yes, it's good for him. And he was definitely, he's doing in Houston what we thought that he could do in Chicago.
They traded for a player that could have success in their ballpark, an extreme pull hitter, right?
Right.
Right. And a guy that proved even in a bigger ballpark with the Rays that he could hit. When he came to the Cubs, he was totally out of it. Now, I mean, we didn't see one good thing out of the guy the whole time he was there.
I think the one thing you worry about when you see something like that happened on Friday night is that you can rationalize and even like make a good argument as you are, it's worth the trade because Kyle Tucker, if you get more than 1 year out of him, absolutely, this is a trade worth making. You have to take that chance.
David, just think how the mentality would be different if we weren't talking $500 million to Tucker all the first half of the season, and you're talking about Paredes being under contract, Smith being under contract for five more years after this, and they may or may not have the same record that they have right now, okay? Again, I would say that this trade was worth it for getting Tucker. He's that big of a difference.
I don't disagree with that. And Diaz homered, not Paredes. He still has 16 home runs, but I still think it's one of those things you look at and you think, wow, what did they do? And can you really justify it? Kyle Tucker, though, Bruce, if he signs a contract to stay in Chicago in the offseason or even before that, then you don't, this is a conversation that you're having this conversation because you're afraid of losing him after 1 year. But I don't think that if you lose him after 1 year, it's not worth it.
What if it's a year you won't win the World Series?
Well, then it is worth it.
Okay. Well, how many ways do you want to cut it?
Well, I think the last 10 days, after you tell me if they haven't won a series against a winning team since April, I don't know if this looks like a World Series team.
Again, it's still a very good team. I am so impressed with this team, the way they play baseball, okay? Yesterday, it was obvious that Horton didn't have good stuff, right? He could have been knocked out in the first or second inning. Great plays by who you're talking about, the best right fielder maybe in baseball right now, this side of Judge, right?
Mm-hmm.
Cuts down a runner at home plate. The left fielder, who's won 3 gold gloves in a row, makes a fantastic catch with the bases loaded that would have changed the game right there, and he's saved. So it was just not a good night for Horton. But my point is, after these starting pitchers in a lot of these games, the 10 games that we mentioned, they're 4-6, the bullpen has been totally shut down, okay? They shut everything down. The bullpen, Houston has the best bullpen in baseball, but the Cubs' bullpen since May the 14th is as good as any in the game, okay?
Yes.
So there's a lot to like about the Chicago Cubs. There still is, okay? Do they need to fortify starting pitching? Do they need to get Tyone right, okay? Do they need to get Horton, wherever he's going in his rookie year? Again,
in fairness, it was his first really bad start.
Yeah, it was.
It was his first really bad moment as a Cub.
But are you willing to bet on his player development as being enough to be a rotation piece the rest of the year as opposed to going out and getting another starting pitcher? Horton can still be in there. Ray goes to the bullpen. Okay, all of that.
That's a very good question. Here's another one. What does Kyle Tucker think about staying with the Cubs beyond this year? He spoke to our Zach Zaidman during the pregame show on Friday in his return to Houston. Zach had a really good interview and sit down with Kyle Tucker like he does with most Cubs before the game. If you really want to follow what the Cubs are going on, listen to the pregame show because Zach Zaidman definitely talks to all the right people. And this is Kyle Tucker when asked about his future in Chicago.
For the most part, I just kind of focus on my day-to-day stuff. I mean, at the end of the day, like, everything's going to be where it's at, and I don't try and, force things or, like, sway things one way or the other. I just try and do my part, and I know at the end of the day or at the end of the season or whatever, like, things will be where I want them to be, and, this team will be where they want to be. Like, you just take care of your day-to-day stuff. Like, I think everything kind of works out in the end. I don't try and, look too far into the future and plan too far ahead because things can change at any point. So I don't think about that stuff. I think everyone's, seasons are different. Everyone's free agency is different. Everything with contracts and whatnot is different. So, everyone probably handles it a little differently. I'm sure some guys kind of let the pressure of, you know, trying to get your numbers into a free agency, like, kind of overwhelm you and you're pressed too much. So, like, I try not to let that happen. I don't want to say not care about it, but, I mean, I try not to worry about it and just play, and whatever happens, happens.
Kyle Tucker on the pregame show with Zach Zabin. Bruce, he also said earlier in the week in an interview with NBC5's Mike Berman about how much he liked playing at Wrigley Field and how well things were going for him. What's your gut feeling on Kyle Tucker?
That he's going to get the most money of any player next season during free agency. So my question to you, David, is, and a great job by Zach, who does phenomenal work every pregame. He has to clean up for the mess I make on there. The idea, though, my question to you, David, is this. If you're Kyle Tucker, what is the benefit of signing with the Cubs early? The Cubs come to them, Tim, say, here's $450 million over the next 10 years. That's $45 million a year. Please take it. You know, the offer's only on the table.
There's no financial benefit.
30 days.
There's no financial benefit. Right. I don't think that you ever, the only benefit would be peace of mind. If it is bothering Kyle Tucker, and it doesn't appear to be, and it certainly hasn't affected his production, I don't believe. But if you just want to have peace of mind, family security, moving forward mentally, and knowing that you're
going
to...
He's got family security right now.
Well, I know he's got very good security. Nobody's going to be worried about his financial stability. I just mean the peace of mind so he doesn't have to have the uncertainty looming over everything that he does and says, and every time that he talks to a reporter that question is one sentence away from being asked.
What about the looming lockout and supposed salary cap coming in 27? Does that impact your decision to get the money now rather than wait for maybe a wonky free agent?
That's the projection that his agent, Scott Boras, Boras, that his agent is being paid to project for him. So I think that it's a very understandable concern, but it's not something, if you're a player, that you get involved in. You have to believe your agent understands the marketplace and also understands what people would expect. That would be a motivating factor for me.
Where would you rather play? L.A.? Yankee Stadium?
He doesn't seem like a guy that craves...
Is he a Yankee Stadium
that,
type
that
guy?
Craves L.A. or would be comfortable in the daily spotlight and pressure cooker that New York represents. Boston? I don't think they would go to Boston. No, I don't think that. I think he's where he belongs. I think he's where he belongs because the Cub fan base, and like we projected and talked about, Wrigley Field is very conducive for a guy that is as laid back and seems to be easygoing and affable as Kyle Tucker is. He's not going to be the life of the party. Doesn't strike me as a guy like that. But he is somebody that plays hard, does the right thing, and is very much not a me guy. And I respect the way that he approaches his job.
Sounds like Billy Williams, a modern-day Billy Williams.
Well, he does have that swing. He does have a sweet swing. He has such a swing that they liked him. They wanted him to emulate Ted Williams. You remember that? Remember that story?
Yeah.
Kyle Tucker emulated Ted Williams for a documentary, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Guess what? That swing and many others will be analyzed in our next segment.
You are a radio pro. That's a good segue because when we come back here on Inside the Clubhouse, we're going to talk to Cubs hitting coach Dustin Kelly. Will join us here. I'm David Hall, Bruce Levine, Inside the Clubhouse till 11 o'clock right here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Matt hits a ground ball toward third. Fair down the left field line into no man's land. This is going to score two. And Shaw is going to have a double.
It's been a little bit of a struggle for Matt here, but you know the big leagues keep coming at you, and good pitchers keep coming at you. It's nice to see some fall. Really, I mean he's had some hit some balls hard and hasn't had any luck on them. So squeak some balls. Or last one was hit pretty hard. We got some balls through tonight, and hopefully that's something for him to build on.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse.
Welcome back to Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. David Hall and Bruce Lyon here until 11 o'clock talking baseball. That was Craig Counsell and the Score's highlight from Friday night in the Cubs 7-4 loss to the Astros down in Houston. It brings us out to our Score hotline brought to you by Circa Sports Illinois. Download the Circa app today. Cubs hitting instructor Dustin Kelly joins us. Good morning, Dustin. How are you?
Good morning, guys. Doing great.
Thank you for joining us. Let's start there. We've been talking a lot about Kyle Tucker last night. He got the nice ovation in Houston and returns to the park where he won a World Series, and it was great to see. And everyone in Chicago appreciates what he means to this lineup. When people ask you, where you tried to explain what he means to this lineup and how everyone benefits from Kyle Tucker's presence in it, how do you explain that?
Yeah, I think that right away you can just go to the back of the baseball card and look at some of the accolades that he's gotten and just what he's been able to do in this league for a number of years. And then you put that in your lineup surrounded by your players and guys like Happ and Suzuki and Dansby and even Pete and all of our guys, they just get better around him because of how pitchers have to attack him and teams have to game plan for that exact at bat throughout the game. And it gives us some pretty good matchups with the bullpen because they have to really plan on how they're going to get Kyle Tucker out. And they're having to start to do that with Seiya now and even Pete. And you're seeing it just kind of roll down the bottom of the lineup.
Dustin, when you look at helping or not helping a player, it seems like Tucker is that guy. When we talk to Craig Counsell about him, he says, you know what? We basically leave him alone because his swing and his game is so uniquely his and his work ethic is so uniquely his that we don't poke the bear. What about from the hitting coach's point of view? Where do you go with a guy like Tucker who is so locked into his own routine?
Yeah, I think like when you're working with these highly competitive and athletes that are at the top of their game, a lot of it is what is their routine, what makes them tick. And Kyle isn't a big mechanical guy. He's not there studying the iPad like some of our other guys are, but he thinks about his swing in a different way. And there's a couple little cues that he and I have that we kind of watch together. And if there is something that looks a little bit off, whether it's his handset or his toe tap, he's always open to whatever information you have. And then he thinks about the game planning a little different. He knows that he doesn't get pitched to the scouting report like the rest of the team. Like even last night that, you know, the guy didn't really throw cutters to lefties. He didn't have that, you know, on the scouting report, but Kyle sees two cutters and he's kind of used to that they don't make up pitches, but they'll throw a lower percentage pitch knowing that he's not looking for it or trying to get him off of what the regular scouting report to be.
Dustin, we came in and we heard Craig Counsell talking about Matt Shaw, who, when he was brought back from Iowa, really was hitting the ball and looking confident at the plate and doing everything right. And we noticed the mechanical changes were making an impact. And he has relatively struggled since that point. There's been some ups and downs. Where is he in his development in your mind? And why has he maybe struggled over the last several weeks?
Yeah, it's hard to see it, but I do still think that he's making progress. And we as a staff have talked about this, and we're open with Maddie about it too, and kind of what he's going through. And they're still trying to find the footing of like, okay, what is your best swing? What puts you on time the most? And it's not necessarily about leg kick or hand height or this or that. It's more of like, how do we get you into the box feeling really confident and comfortable attacking pitches the way that you want to attack pitches? And it's different in the big leagues. I mean, it's just not the same type of pitching that happens in AAA. So there is going to still be guys that, you know, have sinkers that he's never seen before and can locate the way that, you know, AAA pitchers can't. So there's still those growing pains. And I think we saw a little bit of that with Pete last year and some of our younger guys. It's like, it's going to click and we don't always know when. But when we do, when it does, the communication and the open talk in the cage of what we're doing, why we're doing it, how we're doing it, then that needs to stick. And we have to have a really good reason of why we're going to stick with that. And I think we're still kind of looking for a couple of those answers.
Cubs hitting coach Dustin Kelly, our guest for a few more minutes on Inside the Clubhouse. He's David. I'm Bruce. We're here for you every Saturday talking baseball on The Score. Dustin, the way you look at Pete Crow Armstrong, and you know, congratulations to you and the rest of the staff who've worked so hard with Pete. But as a novice compared to you guys, I have to ask you, you know, with Pete's skills, how, you know, he's become a fly ball hitter, okay, and a really impactful fly ball hitter. But it's so contrary to his tool set of, gee, if this guy gets a ball down on the ground, he's going to be safe 7 out of 10 times. So with that all in mind, what is the conceptual look for a hitting coach when he's talking hitting with Pete Crow Armstrong?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's tough. We talk about, we're not trying to hit fly balls. We're not trying to hit ground balls. Like, we're looking for a pitch in the middle of the zone to do damage and drive line drives. And that's kind of what I talk about. We're going to hit high line drives. And it's not necessarily that we're trying to lift the ball or we're trying to be on top of the ball. There are times where we're facing a four seam fastball guy that has a ton of ride at the top of the zone. And we'll talk about, hey, we got to get on top of this guy. And we've got to think down to the top of the baseball, just because of visually where that ball ends up. Or a sinker guy, hey, we got to hit fly balls to center today. So it does go kind of back and forth. But with Pete,
I'm going to interrupt you for a second. And just say, are the guys that good? I mean, can they really change their swing and their approach that quickly and feel good about it?
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely what we call an intent, and the intent of what you're trying to do and where you're hunting is, you know, we know that he's going to get fastballs at the top of the zone. We're going to try and pull him down a little bit, but we know that our swing path has to be a little bit steeper. And know that we're going to try and drive the ball a little bit lower, or, you know, with sinker guys, we're trying to drive it in the air. So that's part of our in-game talk, and that's part of our pre-game talk. So yes, guys can do that, whether it doesn't happen every time, but that's part of our, what we call an approach, and how we're going to beat a pitcher. But with Pete, I mean, he hits the ball so hard, and he is in the air, that there's good outcomes that happen with that. And just because you hit the ball on the ground and you're fast doesn't mean you're safe a lot. I think, like, even if you hit the ball on the ground and you're fast, like, the middle infielders and the big leagues and the third basemans are really, really good. And it's hard to get hits on the ground in the big leagues.
So you mentioned Pete Crow Armstrong, and help us understand the other night. You talk about approach, and this is interesting because I was curious how this gets handled after the fact, because I think Craig Counsell talked about and was very open about when runners are first and third and close game, Pete decides he's to bunt, and he's the cleanup hitter, and we know how he can hit the ball out of the ballpark. We know of all the power you just described. What is the thought process there, and how do you approach it from a hitting coach's perspective after something goes like that and it doesn't work, and just it's got to be a tough balance to strike, because he is such a you don't want him to. You don't want to intervene too much, but at the same time, you know, that wasn't the best decision as it turned out.
Yeah, I think with Pete, he's very instinctual, and, you know, he plays the game with his hair on fire. I think we all see that. But he's really competitive, and he's really smart. And I think what we've given Pete the freedom to do is, hey, like, you drive the baseball. Obviously, you've got 20-plus homers, and you can steal bases, but you still have the freedom to play your game and play it how you want to play it. And, you know, I think, like, in that moment, it was a left on left with JoJo Ramirez, who's their lefty specialist, and, you know, kind of throwing sliders or sweepers away. He just felt like in that moment that his best opportunity left on left was to be able to try and get a bunt down. And unfortunately it didn't work out. And I think, like, if it does work out, nobody says anything, and, you know, Tucker goes sliding into home plate, yep, and we're all high-fiving. So that's just how it kind of goes. And then you just ask him, like, hey, what were you thinking and why? And he always has a really good answer, and we get a chance to talk about it and talk baseball. But we got to remember, he's still pretty young in this league, and the game can go fast for them sometimes.
All right, Dustin, I want everything out of this player because he's so good and he has so much potential. I want him to learn how to bunt, okay? Is there a way that you guys spend a good deal of time talking about his bunting, his ability to get a bunt down on the move rather than just setting up the bunt and bunting it back to the pitcher? How much of my thought process goes into your process of when he wants to get a bunt down or pull the third baseman in, he has the ability to do that.
Yeah, I mean, if you guys unfortunately don't get to see a lot of the work that goes on underneath in the cages or even early batting practice. I know we see you out there, Bruce, every once in a while for early batting practice, but a lot of our players do continue to bunt, and Pete practices his drag bunts and his push bunts more than anybody. And really what it is just it's another tool in the toolbox, kind of what we talk about. And he needs to have that tool, whether he uses it during that week or not. It's always in there. But he is practicing it, and he knows that it's a skill that he has to continue to hone in on. And it's also a tool that he can use for his advantage, and keeping a third baseman a little bit closer to the line, or pulling a first baseman a little bit closer with the runner on second and opening that hole. And a lot of times it just ends up being something that happens naturally after a pitch, and you're like, oh, I saw that one pretty good. I think that guy might be a little deep. And it's not planned. You don't go up there thinking, I'm going to bunt this at bat, but being able to switch that light on really quick and be like, oh, it's open. I'm going to do it, and I have the ability to.
Dustin, Bruce does some of his best work during early batting practice with no one in the building. So thank you for noticing that. let me ask you one more question, a serious question. Michael Busch is having what some people consider an all-star season at the plate. And when he doesn't hit against left-handers, and sometimes you wonder if you might get better at hitting lefties by hitting lefties. What is the right answer there, and what is the right approach? I know that it makes sense because of the percentages and the right-handed, but I just wonder at what point does he get better hitting lefties by trying to hit lefties?
Yeah, there's a little bit of both, and I think like we're in a situation right now where we're trying to win the World Series, and we're every game that we're playing, we're trying to win, obviously, and there's development that happens within those games. But at the same time, we're going to put our best option out there of what we think is going to give us the best chance to succeed against that pitcher. And Michael had a great at bat against the lefty last night. It didn't end up with a hit, but he fouled off a couple tough sliders and then hit a hard line drive to right where, you know, the right fielder just happened to be standing. So those are little wins that we get to talk to him about, and it gets him a little bit more comfortable. And, you know, we do a ton of early work, you know, on the machines and on our traject machine where he's actually facing lefty. So we're trying to get him as much game style reps as we can, even though he's not getting a ton of bats in the game, but we are working on it. And it's something that he really wants to do as well. Just like any other competitor, he wants to hit left-handed pitching.
So, Dustin, you know, I think we're close enough now that I can ask you this favor. You know, today before the game, if you go into Craig's office and say, look, I was on the radio with Levine and Haw, and Levine suggested that Nico Hoerner bats second in the lineup, and that you moved everybody else down so you have more power there. Nico, you know, doing what he does best, getting on base, running the bases. How much do I have to give you to cover your salary after he fires you? I mean,
I was going to say I might be packing my bag, walking out of the clubhouse if you see me on the way out.
I guess the serious question is, Nico seems to be kind of wasted sometimes down at the bottom of the lineup because of his skills. Okay, he's hit two home runs here in the last four games. That's great. That's not his game. So I understand most managers' lineups start with the top OPSs from 1 through 5, and then the rest fall where they may. What are your thoughts about Nico and his skill set?
Yeah, I think Nico can really hit anywhere in the lineup, but I think the way that our lineup is structured with having Hap and then Suzuki, or Tucker and then Suzuki, and then kind of mix and matching the Bush and Swanson and that group, I think Nico fits in a really good spot down in that like bottom three or four at times, just because he's able to do so much with the bat. And when we get to those spots in the lineup, we have so many options with him. And when those guys are on base, you know, Nico's coming up, and he's had some really good success with runners in scoring position. It may not be the first inning you know, like your traditional five-hole hitter would come in and have that opportunity in the first inning, but he's getting opportunities in the second inning or the third inning and driving in runs. So we always talk about the lineup. We always talk about where guys are at and how they're feeling and if there's anything that we can be doing different or better. But I think, like, with how our lineup is structured and performed, it's worked pretty well so far.
Dustin, thank you so much for your time. Good luck down in Houston and the rest of the way.
And congratulations on doing a great job with this offense. And we can do a whole segment the next time you come on the Seiya Suzuki, who deserves his own segment. Just a terrific job. So thanks for joining us today. We really appreciate it.
Appreciate you guys. Thanks so much.
Dustin Kelly, the Cubs hitting coach, down in Houston, talking about a lot of things. Really interesting.
Is he going to go into counsel's office? And
no, Bruce. He's going to go into counsel's office and he said, can you believe what Bruce came up with today?
I like Nico up high.
I think you're living in 2005 and 2010.
You mean when they won a World Series?
Yeah, I think that you're living in the past, Bruce. I don't think you put your number two hitter, what you're asking for your number two hitter is not what we used to ask from number two hitters.
You mean on base, stolen bases, great base running.
How many home runs does Nico Hoerner runners. Have? He has one home run. He got it the other night. I love Nico Hoerner.
It's home run or nothing on home run derby?
No, it's not. But I think when you talk about what the Cubs did at the beginning of the season, they had strength at the bottom of the order. Keep them near the bottom of the order. Bat them seven, that's fine.
It's not a strong bottom of the order.
I have a bigger problem with Bush.
It's not strong. It's not strong at the bottom of the order. Sometimes it's not strong as the number five hitter.
I think you're right. You're talking about Dansby Swanson now.
Yeah, but I'm saying
everything moves down a spot.
You're moving everyone down.
Interesting. We should continue this conversation on the other side of the break because we have to get to a break, Bruce. Come on. You know that.
Got to sell some
radio
belts.
Discipline. All right, we come back. We'll keep talking Cubs. We've got also, since we're talking hitting, Ryan Fuller, the director of White Sox hitting at 10:30. Stay with us. We'll talk trades at the top of the hour. It's Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
We're back with more Inside the Clubhouse with Bruce Levine and David Hall.
Welcome back. We've got a big show ahead. We still have some trade conversations at the top of the hour. And we have Ryan Fuller, the director of hitting for the White Sox, at 10:30, Bruce. But I
talk about a hard job.
That's a tough job. So is coming up with the Cubs' daily batting order, which I think that if you had to make one change in the order on a consistent basis, would it be moving Nico Hoerner up?
I'd have him lead off.
Really?
Yeah.
Instead of Ian Happ.
Well, it's not like demoting Ian Happ. Ian Happ's tools are really good, okay? And he sees a lot of pitches, which is good for a leadoff man. That's why, one of the reasons why he's up there. And striking out doesn't bother him. But I think the speed element, you know, the ability to get a hit the other way, set things up, and then the importance of moving Happ down. Like, I would feel so much better if the lineup had Happ batting fifth.
I agree with that, but I don't think that we agree on the ideal leadoff hitter. That said, it is interesting that of all the spots that Nico Hoerner has batted in throughout his career, he's led off the most.
Right.
142 games, he's batted sixth, 133 games, seventh, 80 games. He's got his best OPS in numbers batting seventh, but his numbers as a leadoff hitter aren't bad, Bruce, so I think that's an interesting idea. I think mine is more interesting. Because I think that Pete Crow Armstrong is the guy I would have leading off. And I would keep Tucker second, Bat Suzuki third. I would put Bush at fourth. And you have your first four hitters are your best four hitters.
No can do at this point. Maybe down the line. Look, Pete has batted in more spots than anybody on the team, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think he's batted just about everywhere.
And you made the point earlier in the week on one of the shows that the reason he kept moving up is because he was one of the reasons the Cubs' bottom of the batting order was so productive
early
in the year, and that was such a big part of their winning.
Kelly was, you know, hitting like you know, Johnny Bench or
or Cal Raleigh.
Know, yeah,
he was hitting like Cal Raleigh.
That, I want to go to school there next time I go to college. Yeah. Cal Raleigh.
Cal Raleigh Pomona.
Yeah.
Cal Raleigh Pomona.
But as I digress, I want to get back to the point, and that is, with having a more productive lineup, the Cub hitting has been really good. Nico getting on base, stealing a base, You know, with Pete up there, he doesn't walk. Okay. So his at bats, if you notice, sometimes end in three pitches, right?
Yeah. You know, definitely.
And it's not always a positive
ending. He's not working
ending.
The pitcher.
It's not always a positive ending.
Fair enough.
He can strike out in three or four pitches, right?
Yeah, he can.
So, but don't get me on. I don't like Pete, okay? I mean.
No, I know you don't.
There's a lot of electricity there.
We don't want to go there. He's having a great year. He's having an all-star caliber year.
I think having an open mind about a lineup as the season progresses and you see that the bottom of the order is not producing like it did, warrants thinking about getting more out of the top five or six.
And yet that won't be the problem that keeps Jed Hoyer up at night. How to get a starting pitcher to Chicago might be a guy who has ace qualifications, and we'll talk about that next. Who might be Chicago bound? It's a game we like to play here and inside the clubhouse. We'll be right back after the break. It's Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.